the new modern rock shoes, you're standing on footholds that are kind of like the size of the edge of a nickel, basically.
Oh, wow.
You're standing on. So you can stand on some pretty small stuff. You have to hold on.
Have a grip then?
Yeah, they do, and they're making them out of... Well, they try to make the rubber as soft as they can so it sticks to the rock, but if you make it too soft, it shears off those small holes. So they're trying to make just the right consistency of rubber for the rock shoes. We've got all sorts of fun, well, go to the rope first. I brought one rope up here this trip because they didn't plan on climbing at all. We climb with usually about an 11 millimeter rope. This one happens to be a 9 millimeter. It's a smaller rope. And if I use this one, I use it with a second rope in tandem with it, just side by side. You feed it out as one rope, but you've got actually two ropes there. It's got some advantages that I'll talk about later, but you trust your life basically to this. It'll hold a ton. I mean, it'll hold plenty of weight. You could dangle me off the end of this for hours on end and nothing would happen to it. But the problem in climbing is you tend to shock load the rope. It's not just the tug of someone's body weight. You're falling. I took the longest fall I ever took was about 60 feet, which I really don't care to repeat. it was like I was falling forever, but that'll really put a lot of shock weight on the rope. It'll be the consistency of like 1,000 to 1,500 pounds on the rope instead of my normal one, which is 200 pounds. So we trust our lives to these things, basically. They're strong, but they cut like butter. I've cut three of them over the years in the course of climbing. And you'd be amazed at what it takes to cut it. I was on a climb once, and it was easy climbing, so I was jutting up there, just going up the rock without wasting any time, and I knocked a rock loose the size of my fist, maybe even a little smaller. And I turned around and watched it, and it bounced around, and this one little strand of rope was going down 100-some feet, and I watched it hit right on top of the rope, and I saw a bunch of white, because the core of the rope is white, and it cut it almost in half when it hit it. And outside of the fact these are about $120 a piece, it was my safety line at the time, which was now worthless. So they do cut real easily. It's something we really have to be careful with. We carry all sorts of things to put in the rock. We used to use things like pitons that you would hammer into cracks for protection. We've got lots of fun things now. I'm going to come over here maybe with these. The low-tech ones are these kind of things here that you wedge them into cracks. They're tapered like this, and you try to find a crack that flares a little bit, like my fingers here, and you can wedge it in there and give it a little tug, and hopefully, if you do it right, it'll stay in the crack. These are for real little cracks, obviously. And these really are nice. I mean, I've fallen full body weight on these things before, and if you have them in right, they don't come out. If you don't have them in right, they shear right out. These are the high-tech things we call friends. They've got a little trigger on them, and you pull the trigger. And when you pull the trigger, they get narrow. And it took them a long time to come up with the right cam angles on these things, but you put them into a crack and then let go of the trigger, and these cams actually hold real well. And they will catch falls and hold weight, and these have to be put in more carefully than these, however. A lot of climbers, when they first start, think you can put these things in anywhere. You can't. In a flaring crack, they come right out. You have to get them placed just right. Otherwise they fail. When they first came out back in the late 70s and early 80s, people were taking lots of falls on them and having them come out because they just weren't being careful where they were putting them. I had one pull once on a leader fall, and it sent me about 15 feet instead of about 5 feet. So you got to be careful how you use them. But we trust our lives to these things. They'll hold a lot of weight. We also have things like clips like this called carabiners. That you'll just put a lot of them on your harness like this. And this is what you clip the rope into. And I'll demonstrate it through the slides later, but you end up tying your rope into these for anchors, clipping your rope into them when you're climbing. You hang gear from them. I use them when I go canoeing in the boundary waters to hang my bear pack so the bears don't get my food. They just have all sorts of different uses. And then the last little piece of gear I got is something called a belay tool. When I'm climbing with another person, you got to have something to stop a person from falling. And you can do it with wrapping the rope around your waist, but you take your rope and cross your hands that way, especially when you're a big guy like me. I generate a lot of force when I fall. I don't have a climber's build. You know, you're supposed to be skinny with big forearms for climbing. I'm not that way. I weigh almost 200 pounds. So when I fall, it's a lot of force. My wife, who goes about 115, has caught me with something like this. It's a brake that you put on the rope. It fits really easily. I'll find the end of our rope here. I don't even need it. You just basically put it through like this. Clip it through the beaner. And you have it clipped onto your harness here. And one end will be attached to me over here, and the other end is attached to my partner. And it's a brake. And believe it or not, if my partner were on this end and would fall, all I have to do is go like this. And there's enough friction in there. Ooh, my harness isn't on tight. I can hold it with two fingers, and I can stop a 200-pound climber from falling. And it's really has a lot of friction in it for the size tool that it is. And I'm going to demonstrate all this with the slides today. I kind of have pictures of how it all works out. Climbing is dangerous. Climbing can be made safer by choosing routes carefully. I choose safe routes when I climb. I try to. There's a lot of routes out there that offer very little in the way of anchoring and protection for the climber, and those routes are real dangerous. If you fall on one of those, you're going to probably get hurt or worse. Lots of routes in Canada are like that. I try to keep away from Canada. But let me run to the slides here and get started with the pictures. It's fun to look through these. For a minute, I thought about just going outside. I've talked to some people, and I've kind of expressed the fact that I kind of lost my nerve last year, and I've taken the year off this year, and it's been fun to look through some of these slides. These are mostly taken by me and my climbing partners. A lot of them, again, taken by my friend Dave Schiffelbein in Seattle. I promised him I would give him credit when I showed these, since he's a professional photographer. And he does. If you ever want some great wilderness images, he's the guy to talk to. He's really good. But this is just my hello, good morning shot. Up at 6 in the morning, this was the first light to hit us, and we're already 600 feet above the valley below. You get to new places where you climb. This was a really easy climb. The leader right there, my partner, is at about the crux of the climb. And it's all maybe a foot wide on the ridge, and it goes up at about a 30-degree angle. But it's about 1,000 feet down on both sides. It's like this little sidewalk in the sky. There's actually a 300-foot section on this ridge where you're about two chairs wide, and you're walking along, and it drops off vertically for at least 550 feet on one side and 1,000 feet on the other side. It's just incredible. And to me, this is what's fun in climbing. It's not a scary climb in that it's not a hard climb, but it's what we call exposed. It's you're way up in the air.
Where is that?
That was in the Wind Rivers in Wyoming. It was called the Wolf's Head Ridge.
Say that again. Where?
In the Wind River Mountains. This is also in the Wind River Mountains. This is the kind of stuff I look for. I tend not to like to rock climb at local rock areas. I like to go into places like this, which is about a 12, 13 mile walk. And I hate to say it, I've been about 30 feet up this wall, but this is one is on my hit list here. The routes on there, there's about four or five routes on this face that goes up here. When I say a route, that usually means a couple of climbers have gone in and climbed this particular piece of rock. There's considered no route there until the first ascent is done. There could be room for 50 climbers on this piece of rock, but so far there's only been about five, I think, that have been done. One could go in and do first ascents, or what I tend to do when I'm old enough now, I look for classic climbs like this that have been done or well documented and are just enjoyable and safe. I like the safe factor these days. This is on that ridge I was talking about, that easy ridge. At some point you leave the ridge and you have to traverse across one of the faces here. And this is really deceiving. This is very easy climbing. Now I'm standing past the... I'm not exposed anymore. I'm stuck in this little corner. But you come across a foot ledge. It's a big crack. The crack's it's big enough where you stick your feet in all the way into the crack, and it's a horizontal crack. And there's a ledge there that must be at least 2 inches wide. But you got your feet into your ankles, and you're on this ledge, but there's absolutely nothing to hold on to. And the wall is slightly less than vertical. It's 80, 85 degrees. And you stick your feet in there, and you go across it like this.
And then below your feet is 1,000 feet. It's like being on the top of a 1,000-foot building.
No thanks.
I was in the valley one day right below this climb. It's sunset. And I could hear two climbers yelling back and forth, and the climber who had come across was trying to coax the other climber across. Mm. Apparently they weren't very experienced, but they spent a nice cold night out on the mountain that night. Mm. They didn't get down before sunrise. This is an example, or sunset, this is an example of a route I wouldn't do. It's in the Canadian Rockies. It's the Emperor Face on Mount Robson, the biggest face in Canada. It's rotten. It's only been climbed twice. The first descent took 5 days. And it's a long time to be dodging rocks on rotten rock.
what do you call that mountain, Jim?
Mount Robson.
Rocky.
In Robson in the Canadian Rockies. It's the highest point in the Canadian Rockies, mm-hmm. Up north of Jasper a little bit. It's scary, just really scary.
Oh.
I look more for things like this. The other one to me is ugly. This is beautiful. You can see in the snow below this wall, there's no rock fall. I mean, there's minimal rock fall on these things. It's Yosemite quality rock. This is the Bugaboos up in British Columbia. Mm-hmm. The only problem here is all that snow comes from somewhere, and days like this are few and far between. This is the most spectacular day I've ever had in the mountains. And this was sunrise in the morning while we were climbing. So I get to some neat spots. Some days rock climbing is just fun in the sun with shorts and a t-shirt and a rack. And I tend to crack climb. I look for little crack systems like this where I can wedge in my fingers and my toes and my hands and climb that way. Some other people like to what we call face climb, where you're not using your face to climb, but you're on small, tiny holes for your hands and your feet. It tends to be much more balancey. I like to sink my hand in a crack, and I'm pretty strong in my upper body, but I'm a klutz, so I tend to crack climb a little better. This is some of the gear like I have here. Usually you take a pretty sized rack along when you climb. That thing hanging from the back of me there is called the chalk bag. I'll dip my hands in that to keep them kind of warm there, or not warm, excuse me, to keep them dry. When I'm holding onto the rock. What I'm doing here, I'm climbing through an overhanging crack, and it's not as hard as it looks. I mean, it's really steep. But there's my hand is basically just wedged in the crack in the back, and you can work your way up that way, placing some of this gear as you go for protection. Right here, my partner's in the lead, and I'm belaying, and he's climbing his crack system, and I'm anchored down here, and he's putting in his pieces of protection here, and he's got one here, and he's putting in another one up there. In case he does fall. If he falls right now, he's going to fall to this piece in the same distance past it before. Hopefully this piece will hold and the rope will catch him. I'll apply that brake and stop him. The one long, long fall I took, my partner started to brake me and all the protection came out. And there was one bolt, which is a permanent anchor, between me and the ground at that point. And I hit a little ledge near that bolt, so I was about halfway through my fall and I got flipped upside down. And I was really lucky, it didn't break my ankles. It was a glancing enough blow where it sprained both of my ankles. And then I went flying down head first. And it was vertical where I fell, but it went to a slab at the bottom. My glasses came off, went all the way down, and didn't break. I walked over and picked them up.
When you're climbing a crack, do you have any protection on the back of your hand? On the back, you jam your hand in there and you push your back against it in the front. Well, you get calluses on the front, but what about the back of your hand?
Athletic tape. You'll see that a little later on. For a lot of crack climbing, yeah, and grainy granite in particular. I had a friend that was climbing an overhanging hand crack with her hands wedged in the crack, and her feet slipped out. And she didn't have any tape on, and she fell about 5-10 feet just like that in the crack. And there was nothing left of skin on the back of her hands. We were just hammered. She didn't climb for a couple months after that. Oftentimes, I'm a Minnesotan. I love to climb in the mountains, so that entails a lot of time on the highway to get to the mountains. You folks here in Washington have it made. You can get to the mountains real easily. For me, it's at least a 1,000-mile car ride to the nearest mountain. You got to do some weird things in some places. This is in the parking lot to the Bugaboos in Canada, and they have porcupine problems. And what the porcupines will do, they'll come under your car, and especially a car like Minnesota that has salt residue, they'll take their teeth and they'll scrape on the bottom of the car. And there were brake lines that were punctured, and they just were making a mess out of the car. So you put this chicken wire around your car, and you found some rocks and old tree stumps, and you kind of pinned it all in place before you took off. You're 50, well, it's about 40 miles by runny dirt road to get to the highway, so yeah, you kind of want to have brakes when you get out. It's really a wild place. I saw a cougar once driving down this road, so it's fantastic. You finally get to the parking lot, you take off walking. My wife and I were kind of sick this trip. This is my wife, and she's got about, we figured 70 or 80 pounds, and I've got over 100 pounds. We're going climbing and skiing this trip. It's not winter, it's August. It's weird to drive for hours and hours from the Midwest and get to a parking lot in the middle of nowhere and have it full of cars. But in Wyoming, that happens oftentimes. This is just in the middle of nowhere in Wyoming, and you hadn't seen a car for hours, and you get in the parking lot, and there's 30, 40 cars there. But our objective is to go in about 15 miles and climb some of these mountains and to ski some of the glaciers in the area. And it's kind of embarrassing to carry skis, you know, the nearest snow patch. This was the first snow patch we hit, and it was like 10 miles from the road. So we thought we should take a picture. I'm looking kind of unhappy here. I was pretty miserable. I mean, this was the most miserable hike I've ever gone on. And I don't know, I kind of saw this thing at the zoo, and that's basically what I felt like the whole time I was walking in there, or at least I wish I would have had one along with me. Old two-humped camel there. Finally, we get to a high camp and get set up. My wife is not putting on makeup here, okay? it may look that way, but what she's doing, we're around a lot of snow, and she's putting on sunscreen. What she's doing is making sure she gets her ears covered. There was a guy in the village who left today that was in Peru that was on a snowfield for 18 hours once, and he didn't put sunscreen on the bottom part of his nose, and he said he lost about a quarter inch of skin. And I didn't think he had a quarter inch of skin there, but he's a doctor, so he should know. Usually I like a little more useful camp. We're camped near water here for a water supply, but you have to be careful not to contaminate the water. We would go to the bathroom and wash our dishes quite a ways away from the stream here. It's above tree line, so it's sometimes difficult to dispose of human waste properly. You should bury it in the soil. Like in the woods around here, it's not a problem. You dig a little hole and you go in a little hole and burn your toilet paper, unless it's fire season, and cover it up. What the National Outdoor Leadership School is recommending, if you're in an isolated place and above tree line, that you go on a big flat rock, and when you're done, you take another rock and you smear it all real flat and let it dry and just kind of blow away. And I've never tried that, to be honest. I hadn't heard that until about a year ago, but they claim that's the environmentally responsible thing to do. But it's also kind of rude. sometimes you camp by beautiful lakes. Here we're just making our dinner by the lake. We carry all the food, our tents, and everything with us into some of these more remote areas. Just kind of hang out and just have some beautiful evenings. That's my wife in the red coat there, and she's not mad at me. I don't know what's going on with her mouth there, but we're all having a great time here. Again, we try not to dump anything back in the lake. We'll carry our dishes a couple hundred feet away and wash them up in the woods. But it just was such a beautiful rock to sit on by the lake, we couldn't resist. Nights.
Where was that?
That was in the Wind River Range in Wyoming. Again, that's kind of my home range. It's only 1,000 miles to get there. So it's about the closest thing.
Oh, yeah.
I'm waking up here in the morning. We set up this. My photographer friend took this, and he had me yawn about 15 times until he didn't send me the one that was good. He sent me one of the ones he didn't like. I'm supposed to be rubbing my eyes and yawning because it's sunrise. We're just waking up. In this case, we didn't bring a tent. We're just camped in this. I'm in a sleeping bag inside what's called a bivy sack. It's a Gore-Tex over, they're covered in your sleeping bag. And we found these two flat spots that had been built up with rocks and spent the night at. You can barely see Mount Rainier in the background.
Wow.
Right back up there. And it was just a fantastic night. It was quite cold, but it was really beautiful. And I usually use my rope as a pillow. It gets kind of cozy. Every so often you can find a little rock tucked out of the way. My wife is looking miserable here, and she is. It's really a big storm is moving in, and it got really cold, and it was sleeting on us, and we found this little shelter built under a big boulder. So we tucked in under there, and she pulled out her sleeping bag because it was just real cold, and this was our lunch break on an approach day, but she wasn't having much fun. Sometimes I try to get as close as I can to a climb. We're going to climb this thing the next morning, and there was a little creek up there, and we put our camp right there, and it was embarrassing the next day. We got rained out, and a couple walked in and camped right below us, and they had no idea we were there. and we were eating breakfast, or I guess it was lunch or something. We're kind of looking down, and my partner says, they don't look real happy with each other. And I said, no, you know, nothing's going on. All of a sudden, they were yelling at each other, and they had this big spat right below us there. And we finally, we got up and made some noise and moved a little bit so they could, you know we were there. But it was kind of embarrassing. Hi, Micah. And he did give us some fantastic areas. This is in the Wind Rivers again in Wyoming. And this was our base camp. This is where we hung out when we weren't climbing. And this stream was about a quarter to a half inch deep, and it just spread out on these granite slabs as it flowed down, and it was just beautiful.
What's the elevation?
Around 10. And then you start off, this would be in the Cascades. You got to carry everything with you. In the winter, we'd often bring a little shovel along. They can be useful for helping to make shelters and things like that. In the Northwest, a major problem is Devil's Club if you're off trail. If you look real carefully, you can see the spines on this thing. And they're very, I mentioned this one the other day in my slideshow. I forgot I had the slide along. Even on little branches, you got spines. The bottom of the leaves have spines. It's just a wonderful plant. And there's not too much of it around here, but the west side is loaded. If you ever drive up to Paradise on Mount Rainier, check out some of the valleys as you go up. They're really bad. Again, we're moving up towards the higher country. Some days you'll hike for 2 or 3 days to get up and do some climbing. This again is Millen Pass with about 6 feet of snow on the ground. And you're only at 6,663 feet here in Washington, but it sure gets a lot of snow around here. We were probably camped on the trail. You're not supposed to camp on trails, folks, but since the trail was 6 feet below us, we didn't think anybody would mind. And we didn't see anybody the whole time we were up there. This is another bivvy up near Mount Stewart, and we are looking kind of grumpy here. We just got back from a long climb, and that's my photographer friend from Seattle in the red hat, and he wanted to set up this picture before we had dinner, and the lighting got bad, too dark, so I was kind of grumpy. He said, okay, I'll give it my sack, get your camera out. In the winter, you may do with what you can. We were trying to climb Copper Peak in winter once, and we couldn't find a place out of the wind. And if you look carefully, this is an alpine tree that's growing up and then sideways. It was completely packed in with snow, so we hollowed out underneath it here. These are our sleeping bags. That's where we spent the night. And we cooked dinner under there, and we didn't have a bit of wind on us. And it was just a spectacular night. Didn't climb the next day because it was really windy. But it was worth it to spend the night up there. Early morning starts, when the sun first comes up, it's nice to get out and get going. Up the glaciers and the Cascades all the time, it seems like you're on a glacier when you're going to a climb, and you gotta be roped up and careful of the crevasses. This was my wife's first time on a glacier, and she thought she was getting a great suntan, and boy, she had water blisters on her face when we got down from being burned. And some ranges like the Wind Rivers, and this is actually in another part of the North Cascades, it's nice. You just kind of walk up, I wore tennis shoes this day, I carried the ropes, my partner had a pack with the gear in it, and we're going to go up and climb the right-hand rock there, directly to the summit. Starting out on a climb, this is the first pitch, first thing in the morning. My partner is anchored down below. I'm using one rope to climb with, and I'm climbing the rock now. I'm not climbing, pulling on the rope or anything. The rope is there to catch me, just in case I fall. We're bringing a lot of gear along on this climb because it's kind of a big mountain. And you can see another rope, a black rope, that's tied to the back of my harness there. And that's for pulling the pack up. When I get up there, I'll pull the pack up with that rope, and then my partner will climb up. And he'll pull out all the gear that I'm putting in as I go up. And also, if you have to rappel off to get off the mountain, it's a lot easier with two ropes than one rope.
But he pulls off the gear you've set, then you gotta reset it or rappel down, is that it?
You rappel it, yeah, I'll show some slides of rappelling later, but you set your anchor, you rappel down, you pull your rope back because you have your rope doubled through it, but your gear all stays behind. It usually in popular areas the rappel anchors are fixed. I did a route in Wyoming once where we had to do 10 rappels with no fixed anchors, and I left most of my climbing hardware behind. It was probably $100 plus of gear that I left. And believe me, it was worth every penny of it to get off that mountain. We ended up spending the night halfway through the rappels. This is how you set protection. Here I've got one of these pieces of metal wedged in a crack up here.
then I've got it down and the rope clipped through it. So if I'm above this and I fall, hopefully my partner will catch me with a break and this thing will stay in a crack and everything will be hunky-dory and fine.
Now, what is that? Is that a strap you have between the anchor and the carabiner?
Yeah, it's what we call a runner. Usually there will be a second carabiner attaching the bright red to the pink. I think in this case we were running low on carabiners, so my partner decided to just cinch it together instead of clipping it in with a carabiner. But usually you'll put another one right here, and then you'll extend it out so it comes out of the crack system a little bit. And as it goes up, this guy went and did this climb with me just so I could take these pictures. But as he goes up, he'll stop, and you try to stop where you have a rest. If you're hanging from fingertips on overhanging rock, it's real hard to reach back to your rack and pull out some gear and figure out the size you need and stuff it in a crack and clip the rope in. So it's going to get hard in a minute. He's on a big rest, so he's going to put in a piece here. He can actually, here he lets go with both hands to do it. When he gets higher up, when you're standing, you can see his toes are on real small things here. It makes it harder to let go and put in gear. So you want to put it in gear before it gets real hard, then climb through it. And he's heading for those overhangs up above, but he's got a couple of pieces of gear in, and away he goes. I had him stop, and I put on the telephoto. He's going to go up and go through this overhang. It's hard to tell here, but when you get up to this thing, it goes out 6 feet vertically behind you. And what you got to do is maneuver a hand over the top of the overhang. There's a big hold up there. And once you grab that baby, you think you almost have the climb, but your feet cut loose. So you're basically hanging by one hand. You got to work the other hand onto it. You pull yourself up and you stick your heel up by your hands and hook your heel on there. And then you just wrench yourself over the top. And he was trying to get good protection, and he was pretty scared when he did it, but he did it, and he was smiling real big when I took this shot. He was quite happy. I've done this climb 3 or 4 times, and I've only managed to do the overhang twice the other times I chickened out. As you go up again, you'll put in protection. This is just another view of it, and you can see it better on this page here, or this slide here. I've got a couple pieces in. I'm using what's called double rope technique here. I've got two ropes coming down, but I'm treating them as one rope. And it's just a different way of climbing. It's a little safer, because if one rope gets cut or something, you've got the second rope to back you up.
Do you have flexible shoes for toes shoes for your toes so you're more flexible, or what do you have for shoes?
They're making them stiffer these days because so many people are face climbing. If it's a stiffer boot, it'll stay on small holds better. If it's a more flexible boot, it tends to do what we call smear. You'll put your foot on a slab of granite, and there's no real hold to speak of, but you can smear the shoe into the rock and it'll hold pretty good. You really don't have much flexibility in your toes. What you want to do is make it as one with your foot, your toes as one with your foot as possible. You buy the shoes a size too small. In my real hard rock climbing shoes, the ones I use for my hardest routes, I can leave on for one pitch or for like 100 feet of climbing, and I have to take them off because they're so painful. I mean, you're just jamming your toes together, and it's not the most healthy things in the world for your toes. It hurts a lot. Something like this, I'm actually sticking the toe of my crack into the crack. I'll stick it in sideways and twist it like this. Oh, and it feels really good, let me tell you. Because then all your weight's on that twisted section of your toes. And your toes scream quite a bit sometimes. As you get higher, the views get better. Here I'm seconding the leader, and I'm pulling out all the gear he put in, and I'm carrying a pack as well. When you come second, you're not facing the big falls like you are when you're leading. If I fall here, he just pulls the rope tight and catches me, and I go foot maybe. So the second usually carries the pack with the extra gear. This place is plagued by thunderstorms quite a bit, so we've gone and have rain gear and some warm clothes along. Just the safer thing to do. And you feel... What, pardon?
Where is that?
This is the Wind River Mountains in Wyoming again. Okay. That lake I was camped by, eating dinner by, is the one right below us down there. It's a real nice spot. You get near the summit. This happens to be in Mount Stewart in the Cascades. Here the climbing is easy, so I'm not putting in any protection. I'm just calling what we say is running it out.
I'm actually leading with a pack on. It's a big enough mountain where one person couldn't carry all the gear, so we're both carrying packs and climbing with packs on. Just another shot. This is so deceiving. I mean, it looks like we're going up something that's not steep at all. I'm going through an overhang up there. That's the hardest move on the climb. And it's pretty vertical, but at the bottom it's not. It's kind of slabby, so it's a little deceiving. But it was very steep. It's actually a pretty hard route. You gotta be careful. I made a little mistake here. I got my piece in here and I didn't lengthen it, and it causes the rope to kind of run over some edges. And that's what you don't want to do. You want to be real careful not to do that, because it's rare that it happens, but every so often the ropes do slice a little bit. This guy, it was unbelievable. He's climbing this huge overhang on a wide crack, and you can see the big grin on his face. I would have been scared to death if I would have been there, but he was just having a good old time leading that. Of course, he was 16 years old at the time, too. Helmets will wear, like on an alpine face like this, there tends to be a lot of rock fall. You can see this is actually a glacier below us here. This is some real black ice that tends to get really embedded with the rock fall that comes off this side of the face. So on an alpine climb, we'll almost always wear helmets and put a little color in the photographs. Route finding. Where the heck am I going to go? I got this route description in my pocket, and here we had all these overhangs, and you can see my partner kind of looking around the corner going, is this it? And it's hard when you're on vertical rock and it's all overhanging above you and you're trying to figure out how the heck am I going to get through this. And if you mess up, you can get in a lot of trouble. So route finding is a real skill. I prefer things like this. You're on a knife edge ridge and route finding is easy. You just stay right on the knife edge. This route gets climbed so much that there used to be black lichen on the top there, but you can see it's all white now on the ridge top. That's just from climbers going by and scraping it off with their hands and feet. Finally, you get to the summit. This is my photographer friend to the left. You can see the back of his hand is taped up there. We're taped up for the whole climb. And this was one of those days where you just wanted to sit forever on the summit. You get to look a little geeky here. I got the rock shoes on, and we're untied now completely, but we have rappels to go down, so I didn't take the harness off. And that's, you basically want the back of your hands covered with the tape. Oftentimes I wear polypropylene underwear when I climb in the mountains. On this climb, we wore that with raincoats the whole climb, because these clouds were building up all around us, and storms were hitting everywhere, and they never hit us. But neither of us wanted to be 150 feet away from the pack, so we just climbed in our rain gear. And this is my friend Dave on the summit. The views, again, are just astounding. You know, this sure looks like it's from an airplane, but it's not. I mean, this is from the top of Bugaboo Spire in the Bugaboos. Looking down, this wall on the left is 2,000 feet high. And we're above that, so it kind of gives you an idea of the scale. It's just a fantastic place. There was a person standing on that summit when we were on this summit. It looked like just this tiny little person on there. You can't see the picture at all, but there was a party over there. If you've ever been to the Wyoming, to the Tetons, this is from the summit of the Grand Teton, looking down at Jackson Hole and Mount Tiwanat. And that would be Jenny Lake in the background there.
Maybe in the last picture, that line going, was that a road going across it there?
Yeah, that's the Jenny Lake Road down in Jackson Hole.
Okay.
It goes through the park there. And then in the Cascades, of course, you tend to see lots of snow and ice everywhere from summits. This is in Wyoming again, in the Wind Rivers. You can see forever. It's just unbelievable. I'm just giving you a bunch of summit shots here. This is one of my favorite areas in the northern Wind Rivers. That area down there is loaded with lakes. All that blue stuff down there are lakes. There must be 30, 40 lakes in the immediate vicinity, which makes fun for climbing and just a nice place to hang out. And then you look around and you see nothing, nothing, no buildings, no people for miles and miles and miles. I was trying to climb three summits in a day here, and this was to be number one. This is the Grand Teton again in Wyoming, and this all this buildup behind me was a big thunderstorm that came through, so I kind of bailed out of it. And evening comes, you got to get off the peaks. That's the summit of the Grand, the shadow in the background. And we're still pretty high here, and we like to get down to the trail. And this particular time, we walked out in the dark with headlamps. I think one of my claims to fame are on Holden. I think I've walked every trail in the area between here and Holden Pass in the dark at one point or another. And not because I wanted to. When you come down, we'll often down climb like this. Right below my toes there goes down about 600 feet. And there's a little ledge we had to traverse around, but we're on our way down now. This is rappelling. I've got an anchor in the rock here, which you'll see a little better in just a second. I've got the rope through a break on my harness, and the rope's doubled through this anchor. Now I'm going to slide down to the rope, and when I get to the end, I'll stop, and I'll pull on one end of the rope, and it goes up and through, and that red thing will stay there in the rock, and I get my rope back. And this is all it is. There was a little knob of granite here that was solid with a crack behind it. I looped it with this piece of red webbing and tied the rope, or put the rope through it, and we slid down. When we pull the rope out of here, it tends to burn this piece of webbing. You get an actual burn mark on there because of the friction, and you don't reuse those. If I were to come to this point, and actually when we got here, there was a blue one there. I couldn't get it out, so I cut it with, we had a knife with us actually, and cut it off of there, looped a new piece through, and then rappelled off of it. But now this piece becomes useless, pretty much. And you trust your life to that. This is pretty good. I like this one a lot. A lot of times I don't like rappel anchors. Sometimes if you get a nice snow field, you put on your rain pants, and down you go. This particular one, usually you get kind of a cold, wet rear end when you do this. This particular one, it was pretty hard. It was almost icy. And we sailed down 1,000 feet in under a minute. And it's the only time that I've ever stood up at the end of a glissade like this, and my rear end was just hot from the friction going down. It was really fun. And it had a good run out of the bottom. If this would have ended in a cliff, we wouldn't have done it. But it ended in a little lake, so it wasn't a problem. You can look carefully. You can see this guy rappelling. There's a guy here and a guy rappelling off over here. This is a little tower that's detached from a wall, and they're rappelling to get off of it there. I slept on the summit for about an hour when I was on it. It's the summit area itself is just this. Actually, it's just this block up here that you downclimb a little bit to the rappel. It's like sleeping on this little desktop in the sky. Snow and ice causes all sorts of problems. I tend to be a rock climber, but this was a rock climb that ended with a snow and ice climb. This is, if you were at my other shows, this is where I stuck myself with a crampon, but you can see some footprints here. We had to go up through this and walk this knife edge ice ridge to the summit. And it was really spectacular, and it would have been great fun, except there was 8 inches of slushy new snow on top of blue ice the whole way. And it was a real pain. We had to wear crampons, metal spikes on our shoes, but they kept balling up with the new snow. So you'd have to kick your foot with the other foot or with your ice axe, knock the snow out, and then keep going. And again, looking out for crevasses the whole way, trying not to dump into any. Looking out for cornices. And looking out for things called whiteouts. Shortly after I took this picture, a storm moved in and started snowing, and you literally can't see up from down. When you're on a glacier and you get in a whiteout, it's tough to see the hand in front of your face. And you lose all sense of where you are, and I mean, you can literally walk off an ice cliff and not even know it. So we took some compass bearings and we got ourselves out by following a compass. The storms are my biggest fear in the mountains. You can't tell here, but my hair that's sticking off my head is starting to stand on end from the static electricity from the storm behind me. And we were on a summit that we had to do 5 rappels to get off of, so it was kind of scary. The same thing was happening here, the dark sky all around us. We took the summit shot, and in this case, we were on the ground before the storm hit, and we were real thankful. This was right at Holden. That thunderhead behind me just exploded upwards. We got hit by this one, and it wasn't much fun. This is not fresh snow. This was the result of one of these storms. It was all 1/2 to 3/4 inch hail on everything. Oh. And luckily for us, we got back to the tent in time, and I'm taking this out of the door of the tent. oftentimes on a summit, you're all bundled up because it tends to be cold, and in this particular case, the descent was pretty easy, so we kept climbing and we summited and got down with no problem. But it was kind of nasty weather. Not any views to speak of. Some days you sit in your tent and you say, forget it. I'm going to stay down here. This is the Lyman Glacier in Upper Lyman Basin. This some days you're on to summons when the storms come, and you sit as comfortable as you can. If it's a lightning storm like this was, you tend not to be on summits or get under overhangs. You tend to want to stay on lower parts of ridges. Sometimes you might sit on your ropes or a backpack to kind of give you a little insulation. You don't walk around with your ice axe up in the air, kind of like this. Or you find a real tall climbing partner and you stand next to them. And you try to smile when it's all over. This is another of those instances where all the stuff, the white stuff there, is all hail on the rock. You know, that's a snow patch behind us, but we really got hailed hard. And we didn't have helmets on this particular climb, but our hoods were all we had to protect our heads. It was pretty painful. Just was no protection. Wind is a major problem in climbing. We were trying to do a winter ascent here, and the wind, it was a beautiful day, but the winds were so fierce that we were just getting knocked around. And there's enough fresh snow, and the sun was coming up where it made for kind of pretty shots. This was in Wyoming, and some of the dangers that you face, this was from where our tent was sitting. There was a party of three there, two climbers and a non-climber, and two of the climbers went off to do a climb. And the third person had never climbed before, but they wanted to climb something, so they wandered up these rocks, and this is really hard, and they couldn't do it. So they went back and started going up the snow slope. And the trouble is, it turns the ice right up in here. And this particular person fell up in here somewhere, came down and hit this rock island, and the little divot right there is where their body hit the snow. And you can't see the person, but they're lying behind a rock up here. And the people that were camped, we were going on a climb when this happened. The people that were camped next to us got up to him within 15 minutes, and he'd already died. It took about 2 days to get the helicopter to come in. He had massive head injuries. By the time his partners got out, it was a good 2 days until the helicopter came in. They stopped at the lake, figured out where the body was, and they went up and just winched the body off. Nobody climbed for a couple of days. We all just kind of hung out in the valley and went, gee, you know, and tried to make up excuses why this could never happen to us. Rock fall is a real problem. This guy pulled a rock loose, and then he knew it was going to be heading for me, so he slammed his leg against it to try to stop it, which he did do, but it cut through his pants and gave him a pretty good scar there. This is my photographer friend's leg, by the way. I've always thanked him for doing this for me. Thought that was real nice. This looked worse than it. Well, yeah, he was more cut up than anything, and face wounds tend to bleed a lot. This was over on Bonanza, and he took a bad fall, and it could have been a real bad thing. It was kind of a scare. We had to get him back down to the village, and he was able to walk okay, but he was kind of sore the next day, but it just made this great picture. As we came walking in the village, there was a bunch of kids playing out the ballpark.
That's Paul having fun?
Yeah. He didn't think it was much fun. And they all said, hi, how was Bonanza? And then they all stopped and saw him, and they just stared. It was kind of grim. He had to go out and get some x-rays. This poor guy is a concert harpsichordist. And I kind of took him over his head on a rock climb. And
look at those fingers.
Yeah. I don't think he ever forgave me for getting him into this. He said he used 15 Band-Aids when he wrapped up his hands. Knuckles were swollen. He was a mess. Avalanches are a real problem. You can see our footprints coming out of this avalanche zone. We set this one off on purpose. I thought the slope was bad, so I talked my partner into pushing snow into the trigger zone of the avalanche slide, and we set it off and walked down in the snow behind it. It doesn't always happen that way. And it wasn't a big slide, but when it hit some of these 2 foot diameter trees, the trees really shook hard. I was real glad that we were coming down behind it and not with it. Wind is a real problem. I had a similar picture of this in another show. All that metal on that rack is just blowing straight out. My partner's trying real hard to stand up here. This is out in the desert. But it just was so windy, we could barely stand up. Our little marmot friends love to eat in the backpacks. They're so cute. And if you're ever up in a high alpine meadow and you hear this loud whistle and you think it's somebody whistling at you, it's actually a marmot telling his friends that we should leave here. I had a couple similar ones of these the other day. We kind of set these up. I've broken both ankles climbing over the years. And we set up a real safe situation. I just wanted to see if I could do this with the cast on. And I got about one move higher, and I couldn't. I said, get me off of this. This is ridiculous. But and made for fun photographs. But it gets you to great places and to see wonderful things. It kind of gets me excited to go out and climb again. But again, it needs to be safe for me. It's fun. Like in this day, it was a day in the sun on the side of about a 500-foot cliff, just really enjoying ourselves. Nothing too dangerous, testing the mind and testing the body a little bit. And again, most of it is more mental than it is physical. When you start getting scared and tell yourself you can't do it, you usually can't. But you get to see some just wonderful things.
Where is that?
That's Marine Lake in the Canadian Rockies.
Look at the color of that.
Yeah. Yeah, my partner, my photographer friend again, took. I didn't bring a camera on this climb. We spent 2 days on this climb, and the vistas were just beautiful. But I really wanted to get home. the Tetons in Wyoming. Even in Tetons, a lot of places are really crowded. My partner and I went into this. We didn't see Seoul for a few days up there, in the middle of Grand Teton National Park. And the Cascades. If you look real close down the bottom here, I'm unroped, and we got to climb this wall. And I'm looking, I really like this picture. My friend who took this, he's on a ridge over next to me a little bit. I'm looking up there trying to figure out how the heck to get up this 300-foot step here. And it was a lot easier than it looked, but it was pretty scary standing down there. I had to climb it with a pack on, and it was real vertical climbing, so it was pretty tough. They're big holes, but it was steep. And it's not frostbite. Somebody said, oh man, did you get frostbite? I had one pair of rock shoes that when I got them wet, ink just ran terribly out of them. We spent a day rappelling through waterfalls to get off of a climb. We had to go in this gully. And we rappelled with our full rain gear on, and we still got soaked. Because I'd be holding on to the rope up here, and I'd go into the waterfall, and the water would just rush up my arm. And the worst one, I'd just get battered around as I was going down the rope. But it was our only way off this particular mountain. We didn't check out the descent route. And the route we knew of went around the backside of the mountain. We didn't want to do that because we had a base camp set up. So we got really soaked. On some days, you just want to put your feet up and say, forget it, I'll look at the mountains and just sit here, relax, and enjoy the view. Thank you very much. Let me turn the lights on here.
Great.
So you've broken your ankle twice, huh?
Well, I've broken each ankle once, which I think is what you said. I broke one here in Washington, rock climbing outside of Leavenworth. I go to all these outlandish places, and I've never really been hurt in the backcountry. It's when I'm climbing close to home.
Oh,
it's kind of like wearing seatbelts, 25 miles from home, sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I was 200 yards from the road to Leavenworth and trying to climb through an overhang on a hot and steamy day. And I was hanging off the overhang with one hand, and I needed protection because there was a ledge below me. And I was trying to get one of those friends in a crack, and I got it in, and I was pulling up the rope to clip the rope to it. And I was on a rounded hole, and my hand got sweaty, and I just, with no warning, it just came off. And I was, if I would have grabbed that carabiner right in front of my nose, I would have been fine. But I just was trying to get the rope clipped in. And I impacted on the ledge and went off the ledge, and it was a straight leg impact. And my partner was a woman I just met in town, lowered me to the ground, and I went to shock for 5 or 10 minutes. And she kind of just was hanging out waiting to see what to do. And I came out of it, she wrapped my ankle in a sweatshirt, and then she carried my leg. Actually, we started hobbling out together. She put my arm around her, and she was supporting me, and I was kind of bouncing on one leg, and we both tripped at the same time. And I fell right on top of her. And we both were just in each other's arms. You know, our faces were like, you know, a couple of romancing people inches away from each other, and she was nervous because she thought the pain was going to well up and be really intense, and I was too. And it took a minute, and we're just lying there for a second or two, and then I realized it wasn't going to hurt any more than it was, and I just smiled and said, we got to quit meeting like this. And then I just got on my hands and one foot, and then she carried my ankle, or my leg, until we got back to the car. A friend of hers was standing at the base of a cliff some years ago, and her name's Katie Kimball. She's one of the best women climbers in the country. She was climbing with another guy, and they were
She's at that point just standing there, and a rock fell spontaneously off this cliff, a sizable rock, and it hit her right in the leg. It broke the bones in her leg, and it all that was left apparently were two pieces of skin the size of two fingers on her leg. Now, Katie is an emergency room nurse and knew that this was a life-threatening situation. And she was able to stay conscious and lucid the whole time. She had her the guy she was with carry her down like a quarter of a mile back to the car while she held her leg in his arms. Got her to the car, took her to the emergency room in town, and realized that the doctors and nurses there really weren't equipped to handle this type of injury. So she directed her own care until they got her to a hospital in Denver. And then she went into shock and went unconscious. And they, first thing she thought of when she woke up is my leg still on? And it was. They were able to, they tried to save it, and it was still questionable last time I heard whether she's going to keep it or not. But she was able to swim again and hobble around on it, finally. It's the most amazing rescue story that I've ever heard.
I've had two friends die on the mountain, two young ladies that are mothers that climb out, you know, climb rocks just for the fun of it. One, Zanna, just died last year.
Where at?
In, I think she was up in the Olympics climbing, but her she'd left a husband and two kids. And I don't know how, and I heard someone else, a couple other people died last summer, that it is a dangerous sport.
Yeah. I agree 100%. That's one of the reasons I'm taking some time off from it.
Well, but you leave a husband and two kids. I mean,
What's Half Dome like? Is that just, you know, kindergarten compared to what you've done, or can you give us a perspective? I'm from California, so I know Half Dome.
Okay, the walk up on Half Dome is the cable route. You just go around the cables. That's not a problem. But the big wall on Half Dome is a great. It's a difficult, long, big wall type of climb.
But most quote hikers that are decent hikers, I'm not myself included, can do the cable. Is that what you're saying?
Well, you have to. I think so, but I think the cables got removed a few years ago. I haven't been down there. It's supposed to be very steep and kind of scary, but I heard the cables were removed, but I don't know if that's true or not. But the wall on there is among one of the biggest walls in the world for big wall climbing. The advantage over that is if you do get in trouble, you sit on the ledge and you yell for help, and help comes. You do that on Bonanza, and you're going to sit there the rest of your life and yell.
No right. <one's> come.
But you bring up a good point and a good issue. That one route where I'm standing at the base looking up was a big route. That one step was a 300-foot step on a 6,000-foot route. And we got in a little bit of trouble on it. And, well, we didn't get that much trouble, but the rock was terrible. And it's the kind of route I swore I wasn't going to do after I had kids. And I felt real guilty about doing it. And I think that was kind of leading to my taking a year or two off of climbing here. You're absolutely right. You know, there are hazards involved in it. You can choose to make climbs more hazardous or less hazardous, but things can happen. I mean, the closest I've ever come to dying climbing was I was on Devil's Tower at the base of a climb, and to get to the base of the climb, we had to climb an easy route up through some cliffs. Well, there's about a 50-foot cliff there, and I had to go to the bathroom. So I walked over by this cliff away from the crowd of people who go to the bathroom, and I tripped. And it was everything I could do to catch myself from going off this cliff. I wasn't even climbing, you know, and it was close. And from then on, it's like I don't go near any cliff unless I'm roped up practically. On top of Devil's Tower, I'm terrible. I won't go near the edge. It's a big meadow up there, you know, the size of three village centers, and you have no idea. You know there are all these cliffs below you. But my friends just make fun of me because I'll just kind of crawl to the edge, look over. I won't walk to the edge at all. And a lot of climbers will deny that if you're careful, nothing will happen. And one climber who rappelled off the end of his ropes and lived figured out how many rappels he had done in his career and how many were safe, you know, and he figured that 99.9% of the time he was safe rappelling, but one time he went off the end of the rope.
It's all okay.
So, and this guy's the reason I want to come back every time. Yep. Yeah, this is Micah here.
Good. When you're climbing and coming back down or whatever, of course, you know, you said you have to leave some of your gear up there. When you find other gear up there, do you remove it for just getting it out of there? Or
Yeah, usually, yeah. Every so often you'll find useful stuff, you know, that you can use again. But yeah, if there was a bunch of granny webbing or something, we cut off the old stuff and then put new stuff on and put in a pack and and take it out. Climbers aren't always the neatest people in the world, I'm sorry to say. Climbers used to kind of come out of the outdoor movement quite a bit and had a respect for the outdoors, and that's kind of changed over the years. And there's a lot of trashy climbers out there now, and it's kind of discouraging. You go to a lot of areas, you'll find tape all over the place, and you know, just a lot of garbage. And I'm kind of sad about that. I kind of like to think climbers have a little higher ethic than that, but there are those that don't.
What got you interested in climbing?
I always loved the outdoors. I started stomping around the hills and start going off trails and start getting into some trouble. And I had friends that said, oh, here, you should do this, and just show me the ropes. And I've never taken any lessons or anything, but I've climbed with some people that are instructors and, or could be instructors, and have helped me over the years. Any other questions?
The one helicopter we saw, where was that?
That was in Wyoming. And that was just body retrieval. There. And it would, even if the guy was still alive, it still would have taken 2 days to get a helicopter.
Oh, sure.
And the poor guy, the guys that found the body, that was their second body in a week that they found.
Oh,
they
had
found one in the Tetons. And the one guy said, I'm going fishing. Ridiculous. And I've never, that's the closest I've come to being by someone who's actually been killed. I've been involved in three or four minor rescues, but nothing where parts were broken quite badly. But I appreciate your comments.
Well, it's just that I knew her, and she was in tone and weight. She was real thin. She didn't eat all the stuff. And I think she just took up rock climbing to give herself, you know, something exciting to do in life. And she's here 1 weekend and gone. And it's just, it affected everybody that knew her.
Yep.
So I think it's sometimes selfish.
I agree. I won't. There's no way I can argue that. You're absolutely correct.
Driving your car irresponsible is kind of selfish, too.
Well, I put on my seatbelt, don't you?
Yeah, but with 50,000 people a year killed in automobiles,
how many killed in rock climbing?
About 25.
Yeah, but there's not that many rock climbing either.
Yeah, to the percentages, yes.
Yeah. But it does give you a good perception on risk.
Yeah.
I tend to look at risk a lot when I climb, and I look at a risk a lot more in daily life now because I do climb.
Right, I'm sure you do.
The seatbelt thing, the child seat issue, smoking, and all that, and you know,
life is precious.
Yeah, it is. It is, and I've got three good reasons, kind of my wife, to be around. Yet climbing has added a lot to my life. It's given me much more self-discipline than I've ever had. I think that's the reason I'm physically fit today. I don't think I would have been except for climbing. I used to joke around when I was in high school and I took the president's test. I could squeak out one pull-up. And I started doing pull-ups to train for climbing. I added up to doing 10 sets of 22, which was just outrageous.
Wow.
I ended up spending about 6 months where I couldn't raise my arms above my shoulders because I was ripping my shoulders to pieces. And I've moderated that, and now I'm looking. A lot of the reason I exercise for sport now isn't to do the sport, but it's to be around. And I think I have a better quality of life, you know, being fit.
You do training before you start a climb.
Yes, yeah. So a lot of these climbs pictured I wouldn't do right now because I haven't been in technical climbing for a year. So there's no way I could hold on.
You talked about several times you weren't able to make it to the summit for weather or whatever. How often does that happen, do you figure, in your climbs?
In the Northwest, I figure if I get up 50% of my climbs, I'm doing well, just because the weather out here is so terrible. In the Wind Rivers or Tetons, that's usually higher than that. And it depends. If it's an easy route, I usually think it shouldn't be a problem. But if it's a real difficult route, and if it's an easy route, the weather's questionable, I'll keep going. You know, if it's a hard route, the weather's questionable, forget it. It gives me an excuse to go down, I think is what it is. But I'm more cautious on the more difficult routes.